This is the Bloomington Review with Jim Inman
on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Good evening, Bloomington. Jim Inman here with you on the Bloomington Review, Friday, May 20th, or if you're waking up with us on Saturday morning on the 21st, glad you have your dial tuned into AM 1370 WGCL or on the FM side, 96.1. Flying solo for a little bit tonight, but that is okay. We've got a great guest coming in just a little bit. Mr. Craig Hickman, he is the Vice President of Sales for ProBlue. They are an IT group here in Bloomington, and I can tell you right now that you are going to want to listen to the full show tonight. We're going to be talking about IT safety, not just for kids, which is always an important topic, but we're also going to be talking about things that you and I and the average adults who get on their iPads or their tablets and their smartphones and social media, shop online, bank online, all of that. Craig is going to have some great information that we all need to think about. Things that I didn't even realize, and when we were discussing tonight's show, and I was throwing some questions to him and things I wanted to talk about, he has some great information to share in just a little bit. So make sure that you stay tuned in for the full program here this week on the Bloomington Review. If you miss any part of the show, don't worry. You can find the podcast link up at WGCLradio.com. On Saturday by noon. That will be available online, so make sure that you check that out. Next week on the show, we will have my friend Dustin Plummer, local attorney, coming in to talk about a variety of legal matters. We'll talk a little bit about estate planning and some other things next week. And then our good friend, the Bloomington lady, Julie Warren, will be back in the studio the first weekend of June. So now that we've got all of that stuff out, hopefully everybody's having a great week. It was relatively quiet around Bloomington, but the cold weather and then the warm weather and the cold and the heat and frost warnings, and I'm kind of over it at this point. I think I saw a meme on social media about Movember, where you feel like it's supposed to be spring, and then all of a sudden there's snow and there's frost warning. And friends in Michigan last weekend had snow come down. Not really any accumulation, but in middle of May is pushing it, I think, for snow anywhere in our general area. Hopefully, though, the plants that you have planted so far and your gardens and everything have started to take off a little bit and have weathered this most recent weather situation. And I can tell you when we get to the forecast in just a little bit that it is looking a little bit better than it has over the last several days. If you're catching us on Saturday morning, or even if you're catching us Friday night, I want to give you a reminder that Saturday is Bloomington Lemonade Day. This is a great program for dozens and dozens of local kids who want to learn about business planning and money and investing and paying investors, giving some of the funds to charity. So you're going to see a lot of places in Bloomington with a lemonade stand set up on Saturday. Make sure that you take the opportunity to go and support these kids, even if you just stop by and tell them what a great booth they have. If you've already had 5 cups of lemonade, still encourage them. Tell them that you're happy for them to be getting involved in this idea, and it's just going to be a nice experience for all of those involved. So Lemonade Day on Saturday, and a special shout-out to Julie Warren and her daughter Ellie. They will be downtown right on the Beeline Trail at Kirkwood, so I will be there to get some lemonade at some point. I know Glass will be there as well. So if you go by, look for the Bloomington lady, Julie Warren, on Saturday on the Beeline Trail at Kirkwood. Then also on Saturday, David Hayes wanted me to get this shout out going also. The Bloomington High School South Boys Wrestling will have a car wash fundraiser down at Kroger South. That's going on Saturday from 9 till 1. Yeah, we've had a lot of rain, but this is the opportunity to get all the rain spots off your car and get a little spot shine, if you will, and help a good cause there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will have your forecast for the weekend, some local news as well. And then again, later on, Craig Hickman from ProBlue will be here as well. Mr. Piller is on assignment this week, and a belated happy birthday to him. I know he's listening this weekend, and hopefully he and his wife Kelly had a good time celebrating his birthday, and we will see him back here very soon. Stay with me, facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview and WGCLradio.com. We'll be back in a couple minutes here on The Bloomington Review. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you. Glad you're joining us for the weekend. Your forecast does not look too bad. A little bit of rain, but a little bit of sunshine as well. Tonight, Friday night, 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 51. On Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 71. Then Saturday night, partly cloudy, low around 49. And on Sunday, sunny, full sun, hopefully, with a high near 74. Early next week, Monday looks nice and warm, and then we'll get a little bit of rain potentially on Tuesday and Wednesday, highs in the mid-70s. Of course, all your weather all the time right here at WGCL Radio and, of course, WGCLRadio.com. On Wednesday, Glass, Margaret, and County Councilwoman Marty Hawk had an extensive discussion about the Monroe County Auditor's credit card use and the current investigation going on with that. According to the Herald Times this week, the investigation into the alleged misuse of the credit card issued to the Monroe County Auditor's office is still ongoing. That's according to Special Prosecutor Sonia Learkamp, and she added that as she continues to investigate, she's also limited on the information that she can make public. It's been about 5 months since Learkamp, who is a former Hamilton County prosecutor, was appointed as a special prosecutor by Monroe County Circuit Court Judge Mark Kellums to investigate alleged criminal activity involving Monroe County Auditor Steve Salter. A little more than $1,600 in charges were made to the county-issued Visa credit card between September and October at 15 different stores throughout the county. That's what is being investigated right now. These purchases included locations as Spencer Gifts, different Kroger grocery stores, and Steak and Shake. The Sheriff's Department passed the investigation on to the prosecutor's office, which, as a matter of policy, decided to hire a special prosecutor because the case involved looking into the actions of a local elected official. According to Indiana statute, the prosecutor's office can take that step if it's deemed necessary to avoid the appearance of any impropriety. Last Friday, this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. Several local Republicans, including candidates for county office in the November general election, approached the county commissioners to call for the resignation of Salter, who is a Democrat, and criticized the length of time the investigation is taking. There were also claims that the surveillance evidence of the case is available, and thus they are hoping for a quick answer. Monroe County Sheriff Brad Swain, however, said that there may be surveillance footage, but it is just part of the investigation. And however, until the special prosecutor finishes her investigation, and unless she decides to file charges, the sheriff's role in the case is done. And again, Marty's interview from Wednesday is available at WGCLRadio.com. You can catch up there. From Martinsville, David Carinder formally pleaded guilty Wednesday morning to killing his son. As he stood in court, in a quiet voice, he admitted that he shot his son, Wyatt Carinder, back in October of 2013. Carinder and his 19-year-old son had come home. They began to argue, and the senior Carinder told investigators he was afraid of his son because he had been violent before. The son went upstairs to his bedroom to be with his pregnant girlfriend. Then David Carinder said he knew that Wyatt kept a handgun in the bedroom and was concerned that he could be shot by his son. In taped interviews, Carinder said he went into his bedroom, picked up a handgun, and then went to his son's room and shot him. He said that when he entered the bedroom, Wyatt jumped off the bed and came at him. Evidence showed that Wyatt was shot twice while standing and four times after falling to the floor, and investigators did not find a handgun in the son's bedroom. Senior Carinder agreed to plead guilty to one count of voluntary manslaughter with a deadly weapon. That is a Class A felony. He was convicted last year of murder, but the conviction was overturned when a juror admitted she read about the trial in the Reporter Times while the trial was going on. He will be formally sentenced on June 14th. The plea agreement calls for a cap of 25 years to serve and the time to be determined by the judge. There's always something going on with Bloomington and businesses, and this new ordinance that is going to have to comply with a U.S. Supreme Court decision has a little bit higher ground on what needs to be going on. Sign regulations in the city must comply with this decision that was handed out last summer from the U.S. Supreme Court. City Council members on Wednesday night unanimously approved changes to 16 sections of the city code that regulate signs. Because they made some additional changes, the ordinance now goes back to the Bloomington Plan Commission for one more vote. This case that happened from the nation's high court handed down two provisions that largely affected the city's sign ordinance. The court said communities could not have different regulations based on the type of sign because of the First Amendment, and that they could not allow some signs in the right-of-way and not others. So what does that mean? Well, City Attorney Patty Mulvihill said that this was problematic for Bloomington because the city has, quote, all kinds of sign types in our ordinance and only allows certain types of signs in the right-of-way. So in response, city staff members immediately stopped enforcing the city's provisions, which had these different sign types included and only allowed certain types of signs in the right-of-way. It also impacts public signs, private property signs, a variety of things like that. And Mulvihill said that with all of this transition, businesses and individuals will be given warnings before starting to enforce fines with the transition. We are going to take a break because I know that we're going to have a lot to talk about with Craig Hickman. Stay with us. We'll be right back here on the Bloomington Review. Welcome back to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you, along with my friend and IT guru, Craig Hickman. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Good. Nice to have you. Craig is Vice President of Sales for ProBlue here in Bloomington and first-time guest on the Bloomington Review.
Thanks for having me.
You're a familiar radio guy, if you will. You've done this before, haven't you?
Oh, several times.
Okay. Well, not with me, at least. So we wanted to have you on, talk about internet safety, if you will. I think it's always a timely thing as kids are getting out of school and they've got summer and everybody's walking around with the chiropractor's dream of their heads bent down and focused on their phones anymore. There's a lot to think about, talk about, what have you. And before we came on here, we were talking about these different scams that people experience, and you've got some horror stories with that. But let's talk about just kids and the internet in general. And you've got three daughters, and what do you do as a dad to make sure
We have our first teenager now.
Oh, do you really?
So this is a pretty hot topic in our house.
What is the rule at the Hickman house regarding tablet, cell phone, et cetera?
Well, currently, we try to limit screen time about 2 hours a day if we can.
Okay.
And the internet right now, you are not allowed to have a social media account.
Okay.
And our goal is trying to teach them the best use case of how to use this technology. Because one of the things I tell the kids is if you put it in the device, it could possibly be replicated somewhere else. So don't post or send anything unless you're okay with somebody else sending it on to whoever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So the social media has definitely been a problem in the house of trying to keep them reined in. But the 13-year-old is definitely hot to trot for some social media because all her friends have it.
And what are the teens doing? What are the kids doing today? Snapchat? Is that the big
one? Snapchat. There's this new application that they're using that is this group thing, kind of like Tinder.
Oh.
But it's more of a group-related solution. This has become a hot topic.
Tinder, isn't that the one where you swipe left or swipe right, depending on if you're attracted to the person?
Yes.
Okay.
This is called Git Squad.
Git Squad.
This is for groups to get together to look for other groups.
Hmm.
So this came up as a hot topic recently. Okay. So it's kind of hard to stay on top of the different type of apps that are coming out because these teens are a high target.
Right.
These people want to sell these apps to these people, and it's high target.
And how are they finding this stuff? Are they just digging through the app store and they pop up, or do the developers actually pay to get their apps boosted to the top?
I would assume they're probably getting it from other friends that they know, more of a viral spread than them finding them on their own. The friends that my oldest has are good kids.
Mm-hmm.
But still, once you open up Pandora's box to the social media, there's an unlimited amount of information that they get their hands on.
Aside from the two-hour time that you give them on the screen, what else do you suggest, not for just your kids, but in general?
I think that with the amount of information that's out there these days, mm-hmm. that parents need to focus on filtering the information that comes into the home. And there are services like OpenDNS, which is a very low fee, mm-hmm. that you can put on your home router, and then you can then dictate what information can come into the home.
Oh, really?
So that you can block malicious sites, bad websites, mm-hmm. So that way you can actually, you know, because it's kind of hard to watch them all the time.
Absolutely.
We have the common computer in the kitchen, so we can see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you can't let the oldest do all our homework in the kitchen.
Do any of them have tablets that come from school that they do work on?
Not at this time.
Okay. I know they do that at RBB.
Yes.
And I'm just kind of curious what if you are aware of any policies that the schools have on their systems.
I don't know if the MCCSC requires any type of filtering or not on their devices that they hand out to the children.
Okay.
Although I probably will deal with that next year because my oldest will be a freshman.
Well, let's talk a little bit about social media then. The thing that gets me is that it's November, you start doing a little Christmas shopping, and you look for a certain pair of shoes for someone, or you look for things that you personally would not be buying for yourself. And then all of a sudden, you go onto Facebook, or you go onto Twitter, or you go onto different websites, and all of a sudden, the ads for those things are popping up all over the place. So how is everything connected? Is it through the device? Is it through Amazon and social media and themselves?
Yes.
All the above.
So when you're shopping and you are perusing the sites and finding items, there's little cookies that are being placed on your computer.
Okay.
And so when you go to another site, that information is passed on. So they know that you previously looked at these items.
Mm-hmm.
I see this now. I mean, I look at a lot of stuff for my business and I see these. Oh, I looked at this yesterday or I looked at this last week. This is something I was actually interested in. And pretty much any one of those ads can proliferate. So you can actually sign up your own website for these types of ads to be displayed from Amazon, Jet.com. The list goes on and on. But that's actually because you're allowing that information to be passed on to your computer. You can actually turn that off. But then when you turn off these types of features, you limit your ability on some of these websites.
And that's what I was hoping to get to at some point is, you know, one of the things that a lot of people use their smartphones for is for getting around the navigation systems. But if you turn off that location option, then you can lose some of the other things as well.
Yes.
So it's
a give and take.
Yeah.
You got to decide, you know, what you should and should not allow, what you want to give out, what you don't want to give out.
Mm-hmm.
Turning off the GPS at certain points of time may protect you for that time, but then when you really need it, then you have to turn it all back on.
We're talking with Craig Hickman. He's the Vice President of Sales for ProBlue here in Bloomington, and talking about internet safety and a variety of things that come up with that. A lot of people do shop online, as we mentioned, Amazon, different things. Is that truly safe anymore? What should consumers be looking at just to make sure they're doing it the right way?
I think shopping online is not any less secure than it was, you know, before. I don't think it's changed. Just you need to make sure that you stay within the core sites. So Amazon, Target, Walmart, Sam's Club, all the sites that people may generally use are pretty safe these days. What you run into is these sites become compromised, which you can't control.
Right.
So what I recommend to people who shop online regularly at different sites, don't use the same password for all your sites.
Okay.
Use a different password. So that way, if one store or site gets compromised, that account potentially is not compromised elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people use the same password. Don't use the same password for all your accounts.
Okay.
And then when you're shopping, make sure that the site's secure. When you're up in your web browser, you see HTTPS.
Mm-hmm.
S stands for security, secure. It's encrypted. So you know that the information you're entering in between your computer and the site is an encrypted transmission. If the site's not secure, do not shop there.
How do you feel about people storing bank and or credit card information with an online website or an online retailer on their website? If you go and buy something on Amazon, it'll say, would you like to use your XYZ bank account that you previously used? They've got it all stored in.
I wouldn't store my bank account or my debit card on a store site. I would use a credit card because you're at least protected. If you use your bank account and you're wiring the money, that is not a good idea. If you're using your debit card, that's no different than the bank account.
Mm-hmm.
There's limited protection if there's fraudulent activity that happens on the account.
What about PayPal? Is PayPal a protected thing similar to credit cards?
Yes, PayPal offers a certain amount of protection
per
transaction. You'd have to read their FAQ on that. But you can also link your PayPal account to a credit card.
Okay.
So when you use your PayPal account, it could charge against your standard credit card. Again, I would not use my debit card with my PayPal account.
You mentioned passwords a moment ago. So if you have all of these different online websites that you shop with or that you access on a regular basis, how do you track 50 different passwords?
I have probably about 1,000 passwords, but
okay. And we won't go into your office and get the little black book or anything.
But the storing of the passwords is difficult. Do not store passwords in your email. Do not store passwords in a file that might be stored online. Passwords can be protected. You can encrypt the passwords locally, but you know, a good program, for instance, would be like LastPass. Is a great program for storing passwords. It's highly encrypted. It's 1,024-bit encryption. But again, you have a core password for LastPass. That's where I recommend what's called two-tier authentication. So let's say you store your passwords in LastPass. There's many of them out there. There's many to choose from. But you want one that does two-tier authentication. So for instance, when you log into LastPass to get to your passwords, they'll send you a code to your cell phone. And without that code, you can't log into the website. So essentially, for somebody to get into the LastPass account, they'd have to know the password, and they would have to have the physical phone in order to get access to the actual account. And inside LastPass, that's where all your passwords can be stored. So you can store all your shopping passwords and all that right there. And then you can launch the website from right there and log in. But let's say you go to Amazon.com.
Okay.
LastPass has an app that's built into the browser that's secure. So when you go to Amazon.com, it'll auto-populate the information in the website for you, so you don't have to remember it. And then you can set a timeout session. So for instance, if you're not at the computer certain amount of time, LastPass logs out, the passwords are all removed, and therefore even if somebody gets in your machine, they can't get in because they don't have the LastPass access.
That is very interesting. That's
it's kind of a convoluted
one.
Way, but once it's set up, it's pretty solid. It works really well. And also then you don't have to worry about having these master sheets that people get or the post-it notes that people put with those passwords on it.
I've even seen the old school, they're like wallet size photos, but they're like an address book for passwords and stuff.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if you want to carry that around and say, here's my XYZ bank account information and all that.
What you want to avoid is storing private information in your email or in a cloud file. Mm-hmm. Because someone were to get access to your email, and you can set up two-tier authentication for email. So if you have like a Gmail or Office 365, you can set it up to where you have to have the phone to get in to protect your email.
Let me ask you one quick question before we take a break here. I actually have multiple emails. Like I have the one that everybody that I know contacts me at, but I actually have a spoof email, if you will, that when I walk into a retailer and they say, can we have your email address? I do that. Is that a smart thing? I mean,
I do that.
Okay.
I have my legit email, my personal email, and then I have my, sure, you can have my email. Here it is.
Right.
Now, I do get those messages. I have a service that filters all my email. And if you're on, this is not my work email. This is my personal email. But if you're on the list of approved users, the email does come through.
Wow.
So it actually reduces huge amount of email that comes into my personal account. So I don't have to deal with, I probably get about 1,000 spam messages a day.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the spam and scams, if you will, that a lot of people experience and what to do about that. And just keep the conversation rolling. Internet safety with Craig Hickman. We'll be back in a couple minutes here on the Bloomington Review. Well, in the break, Craig Hickman and I. Craig is the Vice President of Sales for ProBlue. I think we've covered about every possible topic in the last couple of minutes that I don't know that we're going to have time for tonight. So I want you to come back soon because some of the stuff that we talked about we're not going to get to tonight. However, the one thing I want to talk about, these scam, spam, spoofs kind of thing, these emails that come out that say they're from a recognized service like Google, like Microsoft, like Apple, whatever the case may be, and it looks legit. So how does the average person know what's legit in those kinds of situations?
Well, it's difficult to discern the differences with those at times because it looks legit.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can pretty much spoof an email address. So the most common spam or scam, actually, is when you get an email from somebody you know. And in the email, there may be a link to, let's say, a Google Doc.
Mm-hmm.
You click on the doc, and it brings up your web browser if you're not already in one. And it asks, oh, you want to view this Google Doc from your friend. You need to enter in your password again for Google to view this information. So it looks legit, but typically you need to pay attention at the top of the screen where your URL is. Is it actually at a Google website? If it's not, then more, it's not legit. It's not a legitimate link URL. But what happens, people enter in the information. So they enter in their password. So now the scammer has your email address and your password. And what they do is they then log into your Gmail account, if this is the account that they're looking to get into.
Right.
And they set up all these custom filters so that you can't see certain emails that come in and out of your account.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're going to do is they're going to go through your email account and look for anything of value. And typically what they're looking for, most common thing, is credit card information, bank information.
Right.
And once they're in there, they're then going to try to figure out a way how they can get this money out of your account. And when they communicate with whoever, typically it's the bank account, they're going to try to get money out of your bank account. And when they communicate with your bank, when the bank emails you back, you won't see the message because they set up all these custom filters in your Gmail account, and you'll never know it until it's too late.
So they've set up a filter that, or a folder kind of thing, and it goes right there and doesn't show as typically a new
they
inbox?
Have it go, they typically have it go direct to the trash so that you don't even see it in any of the folders.
Okay.
And then when the email comes back, they're going into your account behind the scenes. You don't know this. And they're sending messages back to the bank and trying to get the money wired out of your account.
If you log out of your account, does that stop it at all?
No.
Okay.
And that's where the two-tier authentication can help stop this. Even if you give them your password and they try to log in and you have two-tier authentication turned on, they won't be able to log in unless they have your phone.
Okay.
Also, in Gmail, if you look bottom right, there is a link that'll tell you the current sessions that are going on for your Gmail account. If you click on this, you can see who's currently from what locations logged into your Gmail. And so you can see right away if someone is inappropriately accessing your email.
I know I get messages like that from Facebook because I've got it, the apps on my phone and my iPad and on my
computer.
Will
tell you when.
But like if I log in here at the radio station to get some kind of information, I get a notification.
Yes.
This is not the normal.
And that's good because that way you're like, well, I didn't do this. So then you know right away that you need to go take care of that.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about spoof emails. And this is even happening with telephone numbers now also.
Yes.
We talked about this earlier where it looks like it comes from your mom or something. And if you look a little bit closer, maybe not so much.
Spoofing of email is very easy. It's been around for years.
Okay.
And when you get a spoof email address, when you get a spoof email from a friend, you can there's information in the email that'll tell you where it originated from. But it's not common information that people would know about.
Mm-hmm.
But you can easily look at the header information. If you know how to read it, you can see where it came from and know that it did not come from a legit person. This is usually how they're trying to get information out of you. You'll get emails from somebody that says, you know, I'm traveling, wire me money. Send it to this PayPal address.
Right.
And they have typically have, you know, got, you know, information or they've hacked the user's account sometimes. That's where it comes from. Now, the caller ID thing is very interesting. This is an increasing practice. I've had calls from businesses which have one digit off. It looks legit, but it's actually one number off, and you answer the phone and thinking like, oh, it's, you know, this business call, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody else trying to scam you into something or trying to sell you something.
Right. Right.
One of the ones that I've run into recently that we've had problems with mostly consumer people is the Microsoft scam. Microsoft calls you and says there's something wrong with your computer and they need to look at it right away.
Right.
So you get on your computer, you go to this website, and it's not even a Microsoft website. You then allow this person to enter and access your computer. This person then either encrypts your files, locks your computer, and at that point in time, they're asking for money to unlock and fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft's not going to call you. Apple's not going to call you unless you set up a scheduled date.
Mm-hmm.
Vendor, no one's going to call you. Your Samsung's not going to call you.
Mm-hmm.
So if Microsoft calls you, just hang up or ask them for a number to call them back on. Have them give you the number, then go look it up on the internet.
Right.
And sure enough, the number whatever they have posted is going to be a legit scam phone number.
We're talking with Craig Hickman, the Vice President of Sales for ProBlue here in Bloomington, talking about internet safety and all different kinds of things. You had mentioned in the break some of the websites that you utilize that others that you just think are good for a variety of reasons. So we're going to put some of these up at facebook.com/thebloomingtonreview. We'll also put it up at wgclradio.com on our podcast page. But there was one that you mentioned about reviews of apps that parents and kids.
Yes.
And I'm assuming we're talking about tablet and phone apps.
Tablet, phone, computer. It pretty much, it covers a pretty wide gamut. Commonsensemedia.org is great for parents who are trying to find out if an app, a movie, a TV show is something that their children or should watch mm-hmm. or use. It's very difficult to track all this stuff. So when
sure.
when our kids come to us and say, hey, I want to watch this show or install this app, you know, we can typically look at it pretty quickly and decide, yeah, you're not watching that.
Right.
But sometimes there's so much stuff out there. So we go to commonsensemedia.org and you can look it up right there. And it'll tell you the age appropriateness for the user. There's reviews from both parents and children. So you can get both sides of the mm-hmm. view and see what the kids are saying and what the parents are saying about the app. And then from there, you can then determine if, yes, you can use this app. No, you can't use this app.
Okay. Then you mentioned one also about OpenDNS. Tell me
about
what that does.
We talked about OpenDNS earlier. OpenDNS is a service that you would pay for yearly or monthly.
Okay.
That allows you to filter the information before it enters your network at your home.
Okay.
You can also use this for your business.
Mm-hmm.
But OpenDNS is a great tool to help block not only just the bad websites, but malicious websites, spam websites, mm-hmm. advertisements that you don't want to see. What they do is they don't actually route all the information through them. They just keep it from entering your home. You have to have a router that supports this.
Okay.
Most of the new Comcast routers do not support this out of the box. So mm-hmm. sometimes you have to buy a different router to use the service.
Okay.
But I highly recommend it for anybody who has kids in the house.
Okay. One other thing also, talking about passwords, we got on this a little bit ago. I'm the only one in my house, so I use my laptop exclusively. If you have a family of three or four people, odds are that they all have an individual device, so to speak.
Yes.
So consequently, they have, if they get onto a web browser, especially as the adults, if you go on to pay your water bill, your electric bill, your gas bill, a lot of those things, the information's already there, or you're already logged in to your Amazon account or your Facebook account on these browsers. Should you log out of everything on a daily basis? Is that a smart move simply because once you're in, if somebody hacks into your computer some way, they can get into all these different things?
It depends on the computer and the operating system. For okay. instance, at an Apple computer, you can actually encrypt each user's account.
Mm-hmm.
So if one user's logged in, they have no access to any of the information stored in the other user's account.
Right.
Microsoft, you know, depends on what version of Microsoft Windows you're using. You mm-hmm. can also help separate the users out. One thing that happens most common is the family computer.
Mm-hmm.
You're using it for your daily family needs, doing your shopping, doing your research, and then you let your kids get on it, and you're using this for legit reasons, but they're on the machine on your account, and the machine becomes infected. And so now you have a malware or some sort of type of virus on the machine is now pulling information out of the machine
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, the opposite.
Right.
But the shared machine is probably one of the most commonly abused machines in the home is because of the different users that are in the home using it.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody who works from home, I would not let their children use the machine. Have a different machine for your kids to use. Don't let them use your work machine.
Right.
And if you are a stay-at-home mom and you're surfing the internet and shopping, you know, you should probably log out and let your kids log into their account so that you at least have some sort of separation between your account and theirs, so that way they don't.
Sure.
But
makes sense.
It depends on the machine and how you've protected it.
Okay.
Always make sure your Windows updates are running.
Mm-hmm.
You're applying your Apple updates. All your antivirus is being updated on a routine basis. You're going to have to pay your subscription fees, which is, you know, something you cannot avoid. For Mac, I recommend Webroot or Kaspersky. For Mac, Macs do get viruses these days.
That was an urban legend then, apparently. I always
heard
that
it's growing these days.
Is it really?
Yes. Yeah.
Does that apply to tablets and phones? Like, can you get a virus on those? Let's just bigger picture there.
Apple is a pretty closed environment. Okay. Those who jailbreak their phones do run the risk of potentially being infected because mm-hmm. they then have access to applications that are not approved by Apple. Android, you have to be a little bit more careful with because you can pretty much install anything you want on an Android device. Anybody who's tech savvy can jailbreak an iPhone and install whatever they want. But the most common user who uses an Apple device, it's a little difficult for them to get it infected.
Yeah.
Okay. But then again, common sense comes into play. When you're using your Apple device, don't go to obscure websites. You know, a great app for an app for the iPhone is Purify. When you're using Purify with your Safari web browser, it'll actually help filter potential risks that come into the phone.
Okay.
It also can reduce your data usage because it'll block advertisements.
Ooh.
So when you're out about on your data plan, you turn Purify on, you're not getting these movie ads and these other ads that take up your data plan.
Craig Hickman, last minute or so, anything that we didn't talk about that you want to throw out there real quick? I know you prepared. I'm so proud of you. Much appreciated.
I tried to do my best.
You did. Anything to share in the last
minute? I think anybody who is surfing the internet just needs to use their common sense.
Yep.
And businesses need to educate their users to make sure that they stay away from, you know, known obscure websites. And just pay attention to your email. Don't click on every link that someone sends you or every file they send you.
Right.
So don't just be careful.
Okay. We will have you back soon, I promise.
Thank you.
This was very, very good. Craig Hickman from ProBlue. We'll be back in a couple minutes here on the Bloomington Review. Sports. We've got some quick sports updates for you before we wrap up the show. Of course, WGCL is your home for Reds coverage all season long, and tonight is no exception as the Reds are taking on Seattle in Cincinnati for a two-game series tonight and tomorrow night. 7:10 is the pitch this evening. If you're catching us on Saturday, the game will begin at 4 o'clock here on WGCL. Then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, a three-game series at the Dodgers. Those games are all late because of the West Coast. Those all start at 10:10 p.m. here on the station. Next Friday and Saturday, we have a two-game series at Milwaukee. Friday night's game is at 8:10, and then Saturday night, still haven't set the time just yet, so it may be an afternoon game, most likely, but again, we will have that information at WGCLradio.com. Don't forget, also, the big news locally across the state, it's the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. If you've missed any of this coverage that's been going on about the event, I don't know where your head's been. You must be in the sand because it is all over the place. 500 coverage is going to start Sunday, the 29th, 10 o'clock here on WGCL. So all of your race action will be available for you live here on 1370 and 96.1 FM. Hoosier baseball has a big weekend coming up this weekend. It's their last conference games. They are 31-19 going into Thursday night's game and 15-6 in the conference. They're playing Nebraska on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as they wrap up their season. The Big Ten tournament takes place in Omaha next weekend, May 25th through the 29th. And if the Hoosiers do well with that, then they will head on to the NCAA regionals. That happens the first weekend of June. So again, as Chuck Crabb would say, check out IUHoosiers.com for all of the details and information about the IU baseball team. A couple shout-outs as well to the Hoosiers. The Lady Hoosiers, the rowing team, is headed to California yet again. They received an at-large bid to compete at the NCAA Championships. That takes place May 27th through the 29th out at the Sacramento State Aquatic Center. That's in Gold River, California. And it's the same place as last year's championship competition. It's going to mark IU's third consecutive appearance in the national championship races. Coach Steve Peterson is obviously very excited about it, according to IUHoosiers.com. And the place in the championship field was anything but assured when the team started streaming the selection show inside the Academic Center Tuesday night. Unlike the last two seasons, the Hoosiers were on the bubble and weren't quite sure if they were going to make it after finishing fourth in the Big Ten Championships last weekend, but they are one of 14 teams to make the 22-team NCAA Championship field each of the last three seasons. So congratulations to the Hoosiers rowing team. And also, big news for the Lady Hoosiers basketball team. Head coach Terry Morin announced the addition of Amber Dean to the 2016-2017 roster on Tuesday this week. She's going to be joining IU from Dayton and will be eligible to play next season for the Hoosiers in her final year of eligibility as a graduate transfer. 5'10 guard from Lathrop Valley, or Village rather, Michigan. She's appeared in 104 games for the Flyers over the last 4 years, and her 2015-16 season was cut short due to an injury just 9 games into the year. She's racked up more than 1,100 points during her time at Dayton, averaging 11.5 points per game, and throwing some steals, assists, and rebounds as well, and helped lead the Flyers to 3 consecutive NCAA tournament appearances in 2013, 14, and 15. Got to take a break to wrap up the show. Stay with us here on the Bloomington Review. Just a couple of minutes left in the program. Thanks again, a tremendous thanks to my good friend Craig Hickman for coming in and talking about internet safety. We're going to try and have him on every couple of months to give some information about things that not only apply to kids, but to apply to adults, businesses, everybody. So we'll put information up at facebook.com/thebloomingtonreview, and of course on the podcast page, wgclradio.com. Your forecast for the weekend: a little bit wet, but a little bit sunny. Tonight, Friday night, 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low around 51. On Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 71. Saturday night, partly cloudy, low around 49. And then on Sunday, it's going to be sunny, ladies and gentlemen, with a high near 74. All your weather, all the time, right here at WGCL Radio and WGCLRadio.com. Next week on the program, my friend Dustin Plummer, local attorney, will be on the show talking about estate planning and things that matter legally for people my age. And I'm saying that for the 30 to 40-ish, you're not really into the retirement phase yet. But by the same token, if you're thinking about what to do for your kids if something should happen to you, if you're thinking about making sure that your home is secure and all, just all kinds of stuff, Dustin's going to be on to give us the 101 on all of that next weekend. So looking forward to having him on. And then the weekend after, Julie Warren will be back from visitbloomington.com. Earlier this week, speaking of Julie, talking about events going on in Bloomington, we had some folks from the Barnstormers of America and Cook Aviation on the morning show with Glass. That's taking place today, as well as Saturday and Sunday out at the Monroe County Airport, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., all kinds of cool different airplanes, antique and classic automobiles, food, just a variety of things. You can check that out there. The New Belgium Clips Beer and Film is going to be taking place at Bryan Park Friday night, 7:30 to 10:30. So if you want to head out there this evening, you can do that. And then there are the Barn Quilt Workshop on Saturday, 1 to 3 at the Monroe County History Center. All this and more, visit Bloomington.com for all of that. Don't forget Lemonade Day tomorrow, Saturday, all day long, bloomington.lemonadeday.org. And of course, the Bloomington High School South Boys Wrestling Car Wash, Saturday, 9 to 1. Everybody have a great weekend. We will talk to you next week. Hopefully, Mr. Pillar will be back as well. Have a good one. Bye-bye.